Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Some of the two for $5. Every Wednesday at this time, we are joined by Greg Cosell. He is presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Call 833-THG-NASH, 833-THG-NASH, or visit Huffaker online, THGTN.com. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, how's it going?
We're doing excellent. Titans with a four-game stretch now where they are in contention for the AFC South. It appears as though it's coming down to that final game against Houston, in which case we're going to be discussing a lot of playoff scenarios on this show and with you with matchups over the final month of the season, which is exactly what the league wants.
Yeah, let's not jump ahead too far, though, Jonathan. They've got a few games before Week 17.
Well, they have to get past Oakland. We'll get the matchup in a moment. But let's start with what they did against the Colts. We always begin with Titans discussion with you, and then we'll go league-wide. I'm curious, are the Titans, when you watch them play with Tannehill, are they making big adjustments to specific opponents? When I say big, it can be a very subtle adjustment, but big to you that stands out on film. Or are they running essentially the same game plan each week offensively?
Well, there's a macro to that and a micro to that. I mean, I think they clearly have a defined offensive profile with Henry the foundation and the play-action pass game working off the run game. Tannehill has not dropped back more than 30 times, I don't believe, in any of the last three games. That's very rare in the NFL. So they have a defined offensive profile. Now, within that profile, clearly depending on the opponent, the nature of fronts, things of that nature, you get specific runs in a given week with an emphasis on some over others. But for the most part, there's not a lot of mystery to how they play and how, I think, how they want to play.
How similar is what they're doing now to what Mularkey and Robiskie were doing a few years ago with the I formation and, like you're saying, rely on the run game and don't drop back too many times to pass? And personnel-wise, with the two tight ends and the fullback?
From a macro perspective, very similar.
Yeah.
You know, and here's what happens in that kind of offense. Your quarterback has to be exceedingly efficient, because if your quarterback's not exceedingly efficient, what happens is you're going to get into too many long yarded situations. And obviously you've got to be able to run the ball not only with volume but meaningful production, because the last thing that can happen in that kind of offense is you run on first and 10 for 1 yard, then you get second and 9, then if you choose to run again, if you get 2 yards, it's third and 7. There has to be run game production, which means efficient run game production. It doesn't mean 20-yard runs, but efficient run game production, which most people view as 4-plus yards per run. And your quarterback then has to be efficient, converting manageable situations. That's essentially what the offense demands. Now, if you get into games where that doesn't happen and you get into more long-yarded situations where the play-action element and the different formation looks out of base personnel that can pose problems for defenses, when those things don't become a factor, then your quarterback has to drop back and make throws.
Ryan Tannehill sacked 6 times in this game. He held the ball for a long time on a number of those sacks. When you're watching that, are you seeing that as an issue of receivers getting separation or him just not seeing things and holding the ball too long?
You know, it's funny you say that. I know he got sacked 6 times, but watching the tape, I didn't see the sacks as an issue in a strict sense, where there was where I felt like, oh, man, there's a big problem with that. It was an odd situation. I didn't even mark down any of the sacks, Chad, because I just didn't feel like that they were that problematic as I look forward. You know, so maybe that's not a good answer, but I didn't see it as a big issue.
In the first half with Brissett, I noticed a lot of bootleg throwback, and the receivers doing a nice job against what the Titans were doing in the zone coverage, because they didn't have the man capabilities with Adoree being down and some other things happening depth-wise. But the Titans, it appeared to that Pease made some zone pressure adjustments as that game wore on. What were some things you noticed from the Titans' defense in order to put some pressure on Brissett, and how ultimately did they stop those 15- and 20-yard chunk plays that we were seeing through the first two quarters of that game?
Well, one thing I noticed, I mean, essentially beginning in the second quarter, they played with Orr and Smith as their outside corners in their sub-defenses. I thought in this given game that they played more snaps of cover three. And I made a note that was that a function of Smith and Orr at corner? It probably was. Only Dean Pease can answer that. I don't know if that was addressed in any, you know, in any conference or conversation. But I thought they played more snaps of cover three. But they certainly present a lot of different pressures and coverage looks out of dime, particularly on third down. They're very good with disguise. They're very good with late movement. In this given game, I thought that disguise and late movement got them to cover three more than their normal cover two. So that was, just watching the tape, I thought that was clearly specific to this game.
So Jonathan Williams was benched in this game because of coverage or protection issues in the blitz game for the Titans. You talked about the good job they do disguising things. Is that something that jumped out to you where you saw where he was really struggling with what the Titans were doing and bringing pressure?
I guess I don't remember a specific play, but, you know, I think that what always stands out is how they pressure, because they pressure with different people from different angles. I mean, particularly when they're in their dime, Vaccaro and Logan Ryan are big blitzers. There was one play, I think, where I can remember where I think he just didn't recognize it. And maybe that was enough for the coaching staff to say you're out. But, Logan Ryan may well be the best blitzing slot corner in the NFL. And what they do a lot of is what I call zone exchange concepts, where they'll just rush four and play zone behind it, but one of the four will be either Ryan or Vaccaro. So they're dropping out a defensive lineman.
And how are they tricking the quarterback into thinking it's cover two versus cover three?
Well, that's just by your pre-snap look, because what you do is you show a given pre-snap look. Like, for instance, if you want to get to cover two, you'll show a pre-snap look with a single high safety, and then it looks like a post-safety coverage, which would be cover one or cover three, and then you move to cover two, which is a split safety coverage. So what you're trying to do is show the quarterback and the offense a look before the snap, and then when the ball snap, get to something else, and it just requires more thought on the move, and anything that can slow down the process of the quarterback is a good thing. Because if you slow the quarterback down mentally, the result of that tends to be they speed up physically.
And they did that on the Logan Ryan interception, is that right?
That was the second interception, correct?
Yes.
The one that came right after.
Because he dropped out.
It's the one that came right before the touchdown that made it 31-17.
Correct, right,
quarter.
Right. Oh, got it. Yes, I made a note of that. That came out of disguise and late movement from single high to cover two. Brissett tried to hit the middle seam ball to Pascal, but had to throw over the top of the middle hole defender Evans, and he just didn't have room. And then, therefore, he had to throw it further. And Ryan, he was a cover two half field safety on that play, not an underneath defender. He was a half field safety in cover two, and he was the one who made the interception.
Greg, we've been waiting to ask you about Tremaine Brock, who the Titans claimed off of waivers. He's released by Arizona.
I know he played for Arizona this week. It's funny you're asking me that, because the last thing I just watched was all of Jared Goff's throws. So I just saw Tremaine Brock, and then I'm saying to myself, wait, I don't think he's with Arizona anymore.
Well, he's now here in Nashville, and he'll face the Raiders this week. I'm curious, because he's described as their best corner on what is a bad secondary. So how do you assess Tremaine Brock this year, a veteran who has played in a lot of games? We know that surface-level detail of Tremaine Brock, the player. Tell us what the Titans are trying to get out of him and ultimately what you saw from him this year from Arizona.
Well, he's played in his career both outside and inside, and he's been with a lot of teams. So he's always been able to get on the field at times, but obviously he's never been a guy that a team felt was the guy, because otherwise he wouldn't have been on three or four teams. I mean, clearly, in Tennessee, if he's going to play, he's going to play on the outside because Logan Ryan's going to be the slot corner when they go to their sub dime and their sub nickel. So he would get snaps on the outside. What is Adoree Jackson's status?
We don't know yet. We know he went off last week with what was said to be a knee injury. And he also had ice on his foot. So it's a combination of things.
Yeah,
and I'm assuming he's not practicing today, but that hasn't been released yet.
And where does Sims stand?
Inactive yesterday, and we'll get the full update today around 2 o'clock.
I mean, because signing Brock would tell you to lead you to believe that they think that one or both of those guys are not going to be ready for this week.
And then with Orr having to play, of course, Sims was already down, so they had to play Ty Smith. If they were to have another injury during the game, they'd be left with a safety.
Correct.
In some instances. Yeah.
Because, you know, now we'll get to the Raiders, you know, in a moment, obviously, but the Raiders present a situation where they could be in decent shape this week with their corner situation, but still, you're 100% right. So Brock was signed because he'll play on the outside if need be. You know, obviously he can play inside. Look, we don't want Logan Ryan to get hurt either. But, I mean, he can play on the inside as well because he's done that in his career. But I think he was signed to play on the outside. They made it through a game with Orr. I don't know the view of the coaching staff. They were able to protect him in this game, playing more zone. And obviously Smith played on the other side. So they were able to get through this game and win it with Smith and Orr playing three quarters.
Tony Barnhart talks college football with you every Saturday. Presented by Stroud's Barbecue and by Tennessee Steel Haulers. Saturday mornings at 9:15 on 104.5 The Zone.
We are with Greg Cosell, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty. Call 833-THG-NASH or visit Huffaker online, THGTN.com. PK is back with us as well as we continue our discussion on the Titans with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Paul, you want to pick up where you heard us leave the conversation?
This game to me was a fun game to watch. We could talk about this game for a half hour.
Well, we'll spare you that because we got to look at Oakland a little bit. But I'm curious about Tannehill's yards per attempt. I think it's 9.1 for his total season. In the last three games, it's 10.5. Lamar Jackson's second over that month at 8.6. That's extraordinarily good. How much is that a credit to Derrick Henry drawing people up, do you think?
Well, it's not a matter of that. I mean, it is and it isn't. There's a lot of run after catch. They're a play-action passing team. And when you run play-action, particularly on first and 10, with Derrick Henry and the fact that they line up with multiple tight end sets or now a fullback and blasting game playing somewhat meaningful snaps, you're always going to get single high. So when you get single high, there are certain things you can do. A lot of it is sort of quick game off play action with slants. I mean, Brown had the long touchdown, I believe it was against Jacksonville a few weeks ago. Plays like that, even Davis. Davis had the 23 or 24 yarder this week. I might have been on the first series, if memory serves me correctly, which came off play action. So play action out of base personnel, and I think Davis was not out of base, but the point is the run game presents defenses with the fact that they'll play a lot of single high.
How often do you see a team blitz both safeties on the same play? I don't even remember the circumstance. I just remember us oohing and aahing in the press box that both Byard and Vaccaro had chased on the same play and gone after Brissett.
I don't think it happens often, but I think with Dean Pease, that he does a lot of things from a pressure perspective, and sometimes it's very safe pressure. Sometimes it's just a four-man rush, and he could bring a safety and a corner as part of a four-man rush and play zone behind it. I think that's one of the things he does really well, because you're bringing fast people from areas that they're not expected to be coming from. And you're not sacrificing coverage. That's the critical part. You don't want to sacrifice or compromise coverage to try to create pressure.
There was a time that it seemed to turn off for Brissett in this game. But before that, they really seemed to be doing stuff with receivers who aren't very good, where they were finding 15 and 20-yard chunks with relative ease. And it was kind of practice squad receivers against practice squad corners to a degree. But what were they doing? How much of it was scheming it up where they were getting Brissett relatively easy throws to relatively open wide receivers.
Well, they, as I said, I think they played a little more zone in this game, the Titans, or a little more cover three, I should say, and that might have been a function of playing with Oren Smith for most of three quarters. And there certainly are voids. So if he's comfortable in the pocket, then you could hit throws. And you don't necessarily need high-level receivers to do that. So there were throws that were made in this game, but I think in some critical situations, they did a really nice job with disguise, late movement pressure. And by the way, I think one player needs to be mentioned. I thought Jeffrey Simmons really showed up in this game and on tape. Now, maybe not with sacks and things like that, but I thought watching the tape, he really stood out to me.
And one of the keys there, I'm not sure if you're specifically just discussing the matchup with Quentin Nelson, but a big part of their run game is Nelson getting to the second level. And we were discussing pregame with Coach Mack about how Simmons may not show up on the stat sheet, but he can play a big role in this just by keeping Nelson at bay and engaged at the line of scrimmage.
Well, there was one play in particular. It was a Williams no gain on 2nd and 10 late in the second quarter. I marked it. He stood up Nelson and got underneath and inside of him and then displaced Nelson to make a play on Williams. He's got incredibly strong hands. It's what we talked about at the draft, Jonathan. You know, remember how myself and Coach Mack talked about how violent his hands are?
Yes, yes.
I mean, his hands are really strong. He can two-gap, which means he can control offensive linemen and then react to where the ball goes. He can displace offensive linemen in the run game. He plays with outstanding power and outstanding leverage, and it stood up on film. And, you know, normally D tackles, it's not a function of how many sacks they get or anything like that, but you know, he could stalemate and defeat double teams, which he did on one play later in the game, I think in the third quarter. So he's just a really strong inside player who they also line up essentially at defensive end. And in this game, they lined up Casey as a wide nine defensive end quite a bit.
It may be tough to identify the wide receiver one for the Titans offense, but is A.J. Brown becoming that guy based on snaps?
I guess. I mean, I don't know. You know, this is not a team that tosses the ball all over the yard. As we said, Tannehill, I think, has had 30 or fewer dropbacks.
Yeah, you're right.
In each of the last three games. So that's hard to know. If they were throwing it 45, 50 times like a lot of NFL teams do, maybe it would be different. And again, sometimes that's just a function of a feeling between a quarterback and a receiver. I can't speak to how Tannehill feels. So that's a tough question to answer, but it's not a team that just tosses it around.
A broad question here on Oakland. In very general terms,
Josh Jacobs.
He's a part of this. He's a part of it. Are they getting more out of their rookies than any other team? Or maybe a better way to ask it: are they asking more out of their rookies to perform and keep them in games than a lot of teams?
They're playing a lot of rookies meaningful snaps. So, you know, they're getting. Look, I think Josh Jacobs is a top five back in the league right now. I think he's phenomenal. He's got outstanding burst and speed. Their run game is an under-center run game out of base personnel. They're a base personnel offense. They play with two tight ends. They play with three tight ends. Waller will be split out a lot, but their offense starts with Jacobs. He's got phenomenal contact balance. He's got a powerful lower body. You better get people, numbers to him, because he will not go down easy.
Why is Crosby having more production than
Cleveland Farrell? I can't answer why. I can only tell you what the tape shows. You know, I think that Crosby he's shown a variety of pass rush moves. He's got speed to power. He has very good hand usage to play off contact. He's shown the flexibility to bend both the edge and be effective as a looper in stunts. He's got burst and speed. He's got a great motor to retrace. I mean, these are things the tape shows. He lines up on both sides of the D-line. He's a challenge.
They throw a lot to running backs and tight ends.
Oh, yes.
What's kind of – who's had the most success defending that, and how do you go about it?
Well, Gruden is very much one of those guys. It's the illusion of complexity. It's a lot of formations, a lot of different personnel packages, a lot of different looks, and then they run basic stuff, which is kind of the West Coast offense approach, which he grew up with that, and he still pretty much that's his foundation. So there's a lot. I hate to use the word window dressing because coaches don't talk like that. Nothing is window dressing. Everything is for a purpose. But there's a lot of different looks and a lot of different formations and personnel. And, you know, I don't know how a Dean Pease feels about that. Sometimes you can just ignore all that, knowing that, hey, out of all that, they're just going to run base plays that we know what those plays are. So that's where they're tough, just because of the multiple looks they present at a base personnel, which is why I mentioned in the first segment that the corner situation might not be as extreme in this game. They could be in base personnel a good part of this game.
Greg, how much fun was it evaluating the film from the Ravens 49ers matchup from an offensive perspective for Baltimore against San Francisco, a defense that the week prior had done a phenomenal job against the Packers offense, now had to go up against the top O in the league, and it was a 3-point game and a low scoring game. Ultimately, how did Baltimore get the run game going with Jackson against San Francisco's talented defense?
I don't think personally that San Francisco played it very well. Yeah, from a tactical standpoint, they had their defensive end constantly crash inside when out of the pistol Jackson faked the ball to the back. To me, and again, it's easy to sit here with a clicker, and I'm not assuming I'm smarter than Robert Saleh or any coach, but I think to me, I'd be more concerned about Jackson getting on the perimeter with fewer defensive bodies than Ingram on the inside of my defense where I have more bodies. So to me, I'd assign at least, most teams assign one player in assignment football. I'd assign two players to Jackson and make him hand the ball off. I don't think personally he reads anything. I think those plays that look like they're zone reads are not zone reads. I think they're designed plays in which he keeps the ball. Now, I don't know that 100%. That's my sense watching the tape. So I would Jackson would be my focus. I do not want Jackson outflanking my defense. I do not want him on the edge of my defense. Let him hand the ball to Ingram where I have more bodies.
Is there one or two elements of what Jacksonville's offense wasn't getting from Nick Foles to where they knew after three games? But after three games, they knew, we're going back to Gardner Minshew. We're not sticking with the guy that we gave the big money contract to, even though he's healthy.
Well, I would argue this. I would argue that in the context of their offense, they're very similar players, and that Minshew was producing and Foles was not. And so, therefore, they're going, you know, it's not like you had one guy who was a high, high-level talent and the other guy who was a lesser talent. You know, they're very similar stylistically in the context of that offense. So I think since Minshew had done well, and Foles was clearly not doing well, they just said, you know what, we'll go back to Minshew, and he'll be the same guy in the context of what we do.
You still believe in New England's offense? You think they get it together?
Not at the moment, because I think teams can, you know, Romeo Crennel's whole game plan was based on taking away Edelman and James White in the passing game. Right now, they don't have much more than that, or it hasn't shown up yet. I don't want to say they don't have more, because sometimes players start to play well, like rookies, like maybe Harry and Myers will start to play better, and Sanu's only been there for a short time. The issue they're having is their run game's been very inconsistent, and last year it was the driving force of their drive to the Super Bowl, and it's not been consistent at all this year, and their O-line has not played as well. So right now their offense is very inconsistent. It's purely week to week depending on the opponent.
And defensively, a very talented New England defense, but at times I got back from Indy, I was doing some work, and I would glance up at the TV for Sunday Night Football, and I see receivers running free against that defense. What was going on with that, with their game plan offensively for Houston?
I wouldn't say they were running free. I'd say they beat man coverage. And when you play the Patriots, you have to, at some point during the game, beat man coverage. Now, they did have a couple of really well-schemed plays, which those things do happen. But Stills caught a long touchdown. He simply beat man coverage, and it was a great throw. At some point, you have to defeat man coverage when you play the Patriots, because you're going to get it, and they play it a good percentage of the time, probably close to 70% of their defensive snaps versus quarterback dropbacks.
Greg, what are some of the games you'll be featuring this week on NFL Matchup? I'm assuming 49ers Saints would be at the top based on significance, and Patriots Chiefs.
Oh, this is a week where there's some really good games. So we're going to do a little more fine focus this week and do fewer games. We have Chiefs, Patriots, 49ers Saints, Ravens at Bills, Seahawks at Rams. And guess what, guys? I'm doing a Ryan Tannehill play action piece, a little Titans football. They won 5 out of 6, and Tannehill's been really, really good. So we put the Titans in the show this week.
Excellent. We look forward to seeing that.
Can you think of a stretch that Tannehill has had in Miami that's similar to the one he's on here?
I can't remember specifically because Tannehill did have some quality moments in Miami. But I think, you know, look, I think it's evident, and I don't think you have to be a guy who sits and watches tape to know that he simply throws the ball better than Mariota, and he's just so much more decisive. And that's, you know, when you're going to do the play-action game, play-action, by its nature, defines reads and defines throws, and the ball has to come out.
Greg, thank you as always, and we will catch up next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I hope we have a good stretch run here.
Yep, same here. We will. Thank you, Greg.
All right.